from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, good to be with you on a Tuesday. Payne and Pendergast, cut down day today, 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock today, the Texans will have a 53-man roster, and we'll see how fluid it is after that. I just saw a tweet. We'll get into CJ as a possible MVP candidate in just a second, but Adam Schefter just tweeted this, retweeted somebody, retweeted SpotRack, actually. 948 NFL players still need to be waived, released, or moved to a reserve list by 4 o'clock Eastern today. So there's still almost 1,000 guys that are going to get some bad news today, some sort of news today that they're
right.
That they're,
right. 1,000.
948.
The bloodletting, except man. Then some of them will receive salvation and like Lazarus, rise up again from the dead.
Yeah.
And show up in a new place.
Yep. Yes. Or at least purgatory on the practice squad somewhere, you know.
They'll be like the Mormon Jesus. That's the Mormon story is that after Jesus was crucified, he rose again in America, and that's where he laid down the tablets up there and what have you.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm sure I'm botching the story, but yeah.
I choose to.
They'll be
the
like that's exactly. What I would call myself if I were caught and then re-signed elsewhere. I'd be
American,
I'm Mormon Jesus.
Mormon yes. Jesus resurrected in America.
Yes.
Steve Wyche. NFL.
Look, sorry. So again, like that. After he was resurrected in the Middle East, then he came over.
Yeah, yeah.
I botched that story in 18 different ways. Apologize to everybody involved.
It's all good, especially Jesus.
Especially Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's the guy I really don't want to piss off. Yeah.
He's a forgiving fella.
That's what I've told. I've been
sometimes
told.
People forget how forgiving Jesus is.
That's what I've
you
been
know,
told.
You get all angry and up in arms, and you're like, dude, you're talking about like the most forgiving bro ever. Let it go.
Right here, yeah. He's forgiving.
I was told by you
yes.
that he's very forgiving.
That's right. Here's Steve Wyche of the NFL Network. They were kind of going roundtable style yesterday, picking award winners for the NFL this season. He's got C.J. Stroud as his MVP.
I'm with you on Patrick Mahomes being the guy, but I'm going to go with another quarterback in his conference. That's C.J. Stroud with the Houston Texans.
Okay.
Okay, now this guy.
Buying in,
only,
Steve.
They've got the offensive line, and they've only got him more weapons. Let's get him Stephon Diggs, okay? He's one of the best quarterbacks already in the NFL, top five or top six guys. Let's go ahead and give Stephon Diggs. This offense is going to be varied. Yeah, people know who the Texans are. They're not going to sneak up on anybody, but they've got a great quarterback coach in Gerard Johnson, great play schemer in Bobby Slowick. But this guy, the effort and the stuff he's put in, he plays the position where it looks easy, mm-hmm. like Mahomes. He may not do some of the spectacular Houdini-type stuff, but the game has come to him so quickly in the yeah. NFL. That's what I'm saying. He's going to be in that conversation an awful lot this year.
Those things are all true. Everything Steve Wyche just said. The only thing that still I think is interesting is how I think national people at least kind of just blow past the offensive line as if it's a strength of this team right now. The very first thing he said when he was laying out CJ's case for MVP, Seth, was he's got the offensive line, and then he quickly moved to another topic. I'm like, okay, well, he's got the offensive line that they envisioned when they made all these draft picks and it gave all these extensions out. Like, they've got the five guys finally together that they want to play the offensive line. And I feel like with respect to CJ, I feel like they're going to protect him at an acceptable level in the passing game.
Yeah.
But the running game is a huge mystery with this team. And I don't know that you win an MVP if you're CJ Stroud, if you've got the same running game they had last season.
It's a big old fat mystery. Yeah. Now, this is what I trust. I'm thinking, somebody said something about Cam Akers yesterday, which I think is a valid point. This might have actually been a Rams fan, which said, hey, yeah, Cam Akers is fine as long as he's not having to see eight-man boxes, so don't do that. Right, that's the beauty of where this offense is right now. Cam Akers, maybe he's not that great against eight-man boxes, especially if you don't have a good offensive line. No, there's no good rushing team that fears the eight-man box. That's what tells you whether you're a good rushing team or not, is whether you can run when there's eight men in the box.
Yeah.
The difference with this team is that, all right, you know, in a three-wide receiver situation, a loaded box is seven men in the box. Then, go for it. Then you trust your defensive backs to just go ahead and take care of these three wide receivers? Okay, go for it.
Yep.
Because then they've got that double-edged sword where the Texans can attack through the air. And that's one of the things that last year the Texans, they could run the ball, but they couldn't take advantage of light boxes the way that they could in the past. And that's real, honestly, that's why if you look at the Texans team last year, and I'll credit one of our listeners for making it as simple as possible for this. I was overthinking some things. The Texans offense showed a lot of promise and did a lot of good things last year, but they really struggled versus good defenses. And you might say, well, yeah, that's normal, right? Like playoff baseball. No, to a big degree. Teams like the Panthers, who had a really good defense last year, they couldn't do anything against offensively because those were the teams that were able to stop the run with seven guys in the box and just sit back and play shell coverage. And it really, like, the Texans couldn't get it done versus good defenses because they couldn't run the ball. So, yeah, I'm with you there. To be genuinely really, really elite as an offense, you've got to be more than just a team that, you know, can run here and there. You got to be able to run when you want to run.
Yeah, and we're talking about winning an MVP here. There's only one of those. You know what I mean? This isn't for CJ to be a top five quarterback or a top 10 core. This is to win the MVP of the league, which also is dictated in part by team success.
So, to build on, Sean, I sent Ben some audio, and he reviewed it because I had to edit out some bleeps. And you know that I'm kind of dicey with that sometimes, so we're safe here. But to go back to a simpler time, back before Indianapolis Colts linebackers EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin were involved in a social media grudge match, this was EJ Speed, you'll hear first, the linebacker from the Colts, and Zaire Franklin's a guy you hear second. This was a week or so after they lost to the Texans in the final regular season game, talking about how rare it is for a rookie quarterback like CJ to operate the way he does.
He won't even be looking at the read, and then you know he got about one more look before it get ugly for him. And then he look at your guy, and you didn't plaster like, got your ass. And then this motherfucker look somewhere else and throw the ball for a completion. You like, nah.
That's what I like about CJ the
That's
most.
That's your third read. You know how degrading that is for a quarterback to hit his third read?
He don't do rookie shit. Like, he play, like, he already lying to you with his eyes. He already lying to you with his drop. He already lying to you with his shoulder movements and little shit like that. That's some shit that you ain't supposed to really have till like year six, seven, buddy.
Yeah.
Buddy. That sounds like the insulting version of buddy that Figgy talks
buddy.
About. Yeah.
Yeah. That's my favorite line from that is EJ Speed. Just, you know how degrading that is?
Third progression. That was good.
CJ degrades these guys. Now, I'm actually doing a video on my YouTube on this afternoon. You guys can look for it. It's the one thing that CJ's been working on, or one of the things that he's been working on, where, you know, last year, I think he was a nightmare already for a lot of defensive backs and linebackers in coverage. You've heard that. But both Bobby Slowick and CJ have talked about his pocket movement this year. Those little things. You think about Tom Brady. Okay, He wasn't that athletic, but man, he just knew just how to take one step away from a defender, get a solid base, and then rifle a perfect pass. CJ's been working on that, and we saw evidence of it. I mean, in that Giants game, that one play when they were backed up in the end zone, there was a little bit of traffic in front of him, and he just took three small steps backwards to create some space while keeping a good base the entire time, and then found Dalton Schultz over the middle. Like, that's the stuff where when I watch this preseason, when I watch Anthony Richardson, Anthony Richardson was in a very similar situation, and he bailed the hell out.
Yep.
And he had Richardson on first and 10 had a wide open check down for an easy 3-yard gain, and it probably would have ended up being 5 or 6. And he bailed out because he saw a little bit of clutter at his feet. The guy hadn't won. It was almost exactly the same situation that CJ was in that Giants game. But Richardson panicked and bailed out. You know, CJ was good in that regard by rookie standards last year. But this year, there was a play in the Steelers game, too, that first reception to Cade Stover, where CJ is looking. His primary route combo is to his right. Juice Scruggs gets bull rushed back into CJ, and CJ, without his feet ever losing like that good base, shuffles to the left a little bit. As he's turning to the left, finds Cade Stover and nails Cade Stover for, you know, a 5-yard gain on first down or whatever it was. It's those two right now, Anthony Richardson and CJ Stroud, are just night and day. They could not be further apart in the way they process the game right now, and it's really cool to see, because I think CJ's, people talk about a rookie slump for him. No, he's improved on his game from last year.
He has. So what would an MVP season from CJ Stroud look like? I think the cover charge to even be in the conversation, Seth, is they've got to win the division again, and they've got to do it with a better record than 10-7. You know, it can't be they're winning the division on the last game of the year because the Titans beat the Jags in a late game. It's got to be the Texans are in the conversation with teams like the Chiefs and the Ravens for the top seed in the AFC. I don't think they necessarily have to be the top seed in the AFC, but if CJ is the catalyst for a 12-5 team with this schedule, then I think he's right there. And the one, he's got a few things going for him. I think Steve Weich touched on a few of them. If you just got in your car, you missed the cut we played 10 minutes ago. Steve Weich, his MVP pick for this year, Steve Weich of the NFL Network, is C.J. Stroud. He laid out Slowick and Gerard Johnson are both back. They picked up Diggs. They picked up Mixon. I think the other two things C.J. has going for him are, one, there's a natural fatigue with voters to vote for guys who've already won the MVP. Voters can say there's not. But, you know, Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes have each won it twice in the last 5 years. Yeah. There is something about voters that, like, that's why Michael Jordan didn't win the MVP every year when he should have won the MVP every year.
I think especially when you start getting into offensive MVP with Lamar Jackson, some of those voters are going to start thinking, all right, well, boy, three-time MVP is, that's Hall of Fame stuff. And I think a lot of the voters might not feel like Lamar Jackson, especially given his lack of playoff success, is, for a guy that young, shouldn't be given something that is typically a shoe-in to the Hall of Fame until he just really proves it on the playoff side of things. So, yeah, CJ might actually have an advantage over Lamar Jackson in that regard.
Yeah, I just think the fact that he hasn't won one yet, I think that bias, unconsciously or subconsciously, seeps in with voters. I think the other thing, man, this schedule is so MVP-friendly. And let me just lay this out. The first 8 games are very winnable for the Texans. I'm not going to go through all of them because you guys have all seen the schedule. Because week 9 is where that stretch begins of all those primetime games. The first 8 weeks of this schedule is very winnable. I think 6-2 is very doable the first 8 games of the season for the Houston Texans. So you get off to a fast start. That creates first impressions. You know, first impressions are very important. Then you get weeks 9, 10, and 11, all of which are in primetime. One against Aaron Rodgers, one against the Lions, one against the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Those are 3 showcase games that you're getting coming off of an 8-game stretch where I think the Texans are going to have a very good record. Now you close it out at the end of the year, weeks 15 through 17. You're one of 4 teams that plays 3 games in 11 days. You're one of 4 teams that plays a gauntlet. This is a great opportunity. And oh, by the way, two of the other guys playing in this gauntlet are Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, and you're playing head-to-head against both of them within a four-day period. I'm telling you right now, if the Texans are winning the division going into that middle of December part, and he beats Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson back-to-back in a four-day period, he is winning the MVP of the league.
That's one, it's funny, the year that J.J. Watt got second in the MVP was they had opportunities that year where they had played some of the guys who were MVP candidates, and J.J. had good games, but the Texans didn't win the game. And I can't remember which specific opponents, but I just remember thinking, man, if a defensive player is going to win the overall MVP, then it's got to show, it's got to be in instances where you can see that he individually was part of beating one of the other MVP candidates.
Yeah.
So with CJ, he's very much in control. Obviously, he doesn't have the same bar to clear because he's not a defensive player.
Right.
But going head-to-head with those guys and winning the matchup, I think that at the end of the year, you're exactly right. It sets up perfectly.
Perfectly. After week nine, you've got six games where you've got the entire country to yourself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's maybe five games that you got the country to yourself.
It's funny that last year, though, if you're talking about going head-to-head versus Pat Mahomes, and now I do think Pat Mahomes is in a different spot than Lamar Jackson. I think some MVP voters might think, like, well, I can't give a third MVP to a guy that I don't think is a Hall of Famer. Whereas Mahomes is already in the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
So I don't think they have that same objection necessarily. And the Chiefs this year are much setter. They're much better set up to be a regular season. They're the classic regular season Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
Last year they had a whole lot of stuff going on, and it looked like Travis Kelce is running on fumes, and their wide receiver core was kind of a mess. They still do have there's a Rashee Rice suspension coming, but by the end of the season, I imagine Rashee Rice will be back. So, yeah, I think that there's a much better chance this year that Pat Mahomes plays like his typical regular season self than whatever last year was.
Those two games, December 21st and December 25th, if the Texans have the season they're capable of, that those are games that are essentially could be deciding who the top seed is in the AFC. You know, like that's going to be a wild potentially be a wild 4 or 5 days of football here in Houston. We're getting a lot of react to this. 5,500 plus fast passing. Okay, they corrected themselves. CJ MVP statistically 5,000 passing yards, less than 10 interceptions thrown, and take the Texans to the AFC Championship game and hopefully win. Just go at a minimum. Here's the thing: it's a regular season award. So how far they go in the postseason will not matter for MVP purposes. If he gets 5,000 here's the thing about CJ. If he gets 5,000 passing yards, I'm not so sure that the Texans have the record that you need to win an MVP, because that means they probably have not run the football all that well. You know?
Yeah, I think it almost
you're playing from behind a lot, maybe.
Yeah, you want to hope for fewer. If they're going to be a genuinely elite offense, then I don't think you necessarily want to covet the 5,000 yards. 5,000 yards doesn't, I mean, it's still a really impressive mark and everything, but it's not like it's always tied to being the best offense in the league. It's the yardage doesn't matter. What people really care about are touchdowns to interceptions.
Yeah.
You know, touchdown passes, few interceptions. These days it's all about the TD-INT ratio, man.
It is. I think ultimately statistics don't really factor into the MVP that much. It's more about what your team does. Like, if the Texans win 12 games or 13 games, CJ's going to have good stats. That's just how it goes. You know, like, they're correlated. So I don't know that, like, certain thresholds really matter unless they're a 10-7 team again, and they're a 10-7 team because he's breaking records for the number of touchdown passes or something like that, you know?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's the most Aaron Rodgers has ever had? Like, Aaron Rodgers has won how many MVPs?
Four.
And he's never had 5,000 yards rushing.
Yeah.
His high water mark is... Or passing, yeah. or rushing.
Or rushing,
Sean.
Too. No, you're right.
Technically correct on that.
Yes.
So, his high water mark, and this is not me. For some reason, we have a few listeners that think anytime I point out anything about Aaron Rodgers, I'm throwing shade at him. No. Like, my point is... He's been one of the best quarterbacks this century. The most yards he's ever thrown for while also accumulating four MVPs is 4,643 yards.
Yeah.
So, but he had, oh my God. That was the year he had 45 touchdowns.
And he probably and he had like six interceptions or something like that.
Yeah, the year he had 45 touchdowns, exactly, six interceptions. Yeah. My God, you're freakishly, you're like Rain Man. The year that he had 48 touchdown passes, he had 4,299 yards passing.
Yeah.
With five interceptions.
Yeah.
Mike, like that's not me that's throwing crazy. Shade at Aaron Rodgers. No. Listen, everybody, in pointing out that he had 4,200 yards passing, trust me, I'm not throwing shade at Aaron Rodgers because he had 48 touchdown passes. My goodness.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy. And yet one Super Bowl. That goes to show you how hard it is to win a Super Bowl.
That was where somebody got all bent out of shape last week because I mentioned that he'd only had one Super Bowl. And I was saying, like, yeah, it's kind of an oddity. It wasn't shade at Aaron Rodgers at all. It's shade at the Packers organization that they very rarely supplied Aaron Rodgers with any kind of a reputable defense in those years where he's throwing for 48 touchdowns. And he did it with all non-first round wide receivers
that's
as
right.
well.
Yeah. No, he's doing that with them not using any high draft capital on skill guys for his entirety of his career. Till they drafted Jordan Love, his replacement.
So 5,000 yards passing does nothing for me. The touchdowns, the team success, all of that.
You nailed it. Absolutely. I agree with you on that. Ocho says
48 touchdowns.
And 48 touchdowns and five interceptions. CJ had 23 touchdowns and five interceptions last year, and he was being hailed as a conquering hero walking through the streets of Houston. Aaron Rodgers had more than twice as many touchdown passes and five interceptions.
He couldn't even crack 4,300 yards passing, though, Sean. I don't know how good a year it really was.
Loser. Sean, to have a chance at MVP, Stroud will have to exceed last year's production while navigating around the strong-arming and biatching of Stephon Diggs. Good luck with that. That's from Ocho.
Ocho, of course.
Noted Diggs hater. Yeah.
He's a Diggs hater.
Yeah.
You're making it. Ocho is... You know what Ocho has been doing over the course of this training camp? He's been hardening my love and appreciation for Stephon Diggs. Every time I see a little gif of Stephon Diggs dancing with Tank Dell on the sideline or doing his special handshake with CJ Stroud or something. I think of Ocho and I spit on the ground.
Yes.
Hey, Sean, one more thing.
Yeah.
About that 2020 season by Aaron Rodgers, which partly maybe because it was happening during the COVID year, it doesn't get propped up as much as it should.
Lost in the wash.
9.6 yards per attempt.
That's insane, too.
9.6 yards per attempt while throwing five interceptions on the season.
Yeah, people need to understand,
unbelievable.
Like, 8 yards per attempt is really good. He had 9.6, you said?
I got to go get immunized the way he did that year. Between the ayahuasca and whichever herbal remedies he was taking, my God.
Yeah.
Whatever. Leave all the COVID stuff out of it. My goodness, was crazy.
Now you can see why it was such a big deal. Like, that there was, you know, when it started getting talks of him getting suspended for, you know, for lying about it and stuff. Like, oh, yeah, that's right. Aaron Rodgers wasn't the dude shredding his Achilles four snaps into the season. Okay, does reading those stats make you any more nervous about the Jets game in Week 9? What do you think Aaron Rodgers is going to do this year?
You know what makes me nervous about the Jets game in Week 9? the Cam Akers' current condition. So Cam Akers had the same Alitrosh speed bridge procedure that Aaron Rodgers had. That, I mean, that's, it's a standard, I guess. That's been the standard procedure for a few years now. It's just that there really aren't, there aren't that many big Achilles tendon injuries, especially with running backs. It's just they're few and far between. The guys that recover from it in the past, you know, there's only one guy this century, Deontay Foreman, who's really had a successful recovery as a running back in the NFL from Achilles tendon surgery. But I think Cam Akers might be on his way to being that second guy, and he's had two of them. So the fact that that procedure seems to work so well, and they've got some experience with it now, they've done it a bunch, that Aaron Rodgers might be all right. He might be all right.
I'm glad they're playing the Jets in week 9 and not like week 1 or week 2, because we'll have a good gauge on what exactly Aaron Rodgers is by that point in the season, you know?
I think you got to point to the fact that Rodgers has been pretty healthy his entire career. He's had nagging little things here, but in a career that started in 2005, he didn't start. He wasn't a starter until 2008.
Yeah,
he's had 3 seasons now where he missed substantial time, but he's 41 years old. His Achilles might just be fine, but I don't know how much you can trust him to just stay healthy overall.
Yeah. When you haven't played football in a year. Text message. Sean, I'm going to literally write that down. I'm not going to literally write it down, but I will remember what you said, that if CJ beats Mahomes and Jackson back to back, he'll be MVP of the league. I feel confident in saying that. And even though I don't know what their record would be going into those games, I think to beat Mahomes and Lamar Jackson back to back within 4 days, I feel fairly confident in saying the Texans are probably having a pretty good season at that point, if they're capable of doing that. At that point in the year, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so, like, obviously, it's a moot point if they
7-8 going into those games. Yeah,
going up to all that.
Yep. Hey, you know who doesn't have a lot of respect for CJ?
Like, well, yeah, Sean, what if... never mind. I was about to paint out a hypothetical that people would be really angry at me for. So okay. Never mind. Go ahead.
Well, let's get him angry over L'Jarius Sneed. L'Jarius Sneed, cornerback for the Tennessee Titans, was on the Pivot podcast. Ryan Clark, Fred Taylor, Channing Crowder, and they brought up Stephon Diggs. Apparently, Stephon Diggs allegedly said he wanted to go to the Texans. One of the reasons he wanted to go to the Texans was so that he could face L'Jarius Sneed. So L'Jarius Sneed, formerly of the Chiefs, couldn't run from him anymore. Mm-hmm. Here was L'Jarius Sneed being told that on the Pivot podcast.
Somebody told me Steph actually called the Texans and said, I want to go down here and be in the same division with you, so you can't run away from him. Now you got to see him twice a year.
Twice a year. Yeah. I'm ready for it.
But he made a special call to say.
I'm glad he made that call.
For you.
I'm glad he made that call.
What that's going to look like? Because CJ like that boy, like Pat.
He's not like Pat. He's not like Pat.
Well,
I respect his game. He got some game.
Right.
But I'm not worried about none of that right now. None of it.
They got a stick over there.
Yeah, we do too. We got a stick too. You'll see when we play him.
I'm going to definitely see.
I mean,
that's my division, too, because Jacksonville and the whole thing. So,
Diggs knows what's up.
Diggs knows what's up.
I think Fred was messing with him there. I don't think somebody actually told Fred that.
Oh, really?
Right?
I have no idea. I don't know. I'm taking him at his word. That's the first I heard of that.
Fred was messing with him. I don't think that actually happened. Yeah.
Really?
Maybe he said it somewhere along the way. I don't know. Yeah, I thought, but whether he did or not, let's just pretend he did definitely say that. The Stephon Diggs said that L'Jarius Sneed can't run from him. I would be surprised if Diggs said it, just because I don't think Diggs is completely not self aware. But Sneed was in coverage on Stephon Diggs on that play where Stephon Diggs dropped the ball in the playoffs.
Yeah.
On a beautiful Josh Allen pass against the Chiefs.
Yep.
It would have been like a 50-yard completion.
Yeah.
Diggs had beat Sneed, but Diggs dropped the ball.
Right.
So, I don't know, man.
So what you're saying is that a wide receiver perceived as a diva would sit down and analytically go, you know, I shouldn't talk trash about this because I did drop the ball on that play. You're inserting way too much rationality into Stephon Diggs.
Although he did. Yeah, you know what? Diggs might be like, Snead didn't make me drop that ball. I had him beat.
Dude.
It was just the weather or something. That's all.
I think Diggs has a short memory, bro.
Let me double check that. Yeah. Oh, wait. No. I'm sorry. I don't think it was Snead in coverage. Is I think it was
McDuffie?
Reed. Oh, no, it was Reed. It was actually Reed was on. Now, okay, but Reed might have been over in support.
Yeah. Justin Reed, so former Texan.
Yeah, Justin Reed. Maybe Reed was the guy there to make the play, but maybe he had already dusted Snead down on the. Like, I have no
I
idea.
I love
but.
How you're analyzing alleged trash talk. Like, should he have said this? Because here's who was covering him. Like, no, Diggs talks trash.
It was a poignant moment, Sean, is all I'm
moment.
Saying.
It was a poignant moment. I like that we've had a little more juice injected into this Titans rivalry here. This didn't exist last year. There was already some juice to this thing last year, and now we got a little Snead and Diggs action going on in this thing. Giddy up, man. They don't play.
Yeah, it wasn't Snead on that play on either. He wasn't the corner or the safety. So.
Gotcha.
Okay, yeah, okay. Re-engage, yes, okay. So maybe Diggs actually said that. Now, Fred, when he did that interview, it was probably because they were in Houston just last week.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing they did the interview sometime before that. I think they had gone to Tennessee before Houston for their interviews.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just know it feels like the interviews they do drop several days later after the
interview. Yeah, that's where
Tank Dell is who they interviewed here.
I want to say, because I was talking to Fred, and I want to say they had said they had just come from Tennessee, but I'm not sure. So they interviewed Tank Dell, so look forward to that. I bet they get some really good stuff out of Tank Dell. Plus, because, Fred, Tank Dell has been instructed to stay out of Florida, whereas Fred Taylor was born, born and raised in Florida, played at University of Florida. He's very much, he played for other teams, but he's a Jaguar till death and all of that. So, I'd be interested in if that comes up that Tank Dell's been instructed to stay out of Florida.
For sure. For sure. Hey,
and Tank Dell, a Florida kid, obviously.
Quick reminder. Tank Dell, also University of Houston Cougar. Quick reminder, before the end of this segment, we're giving away Cougs tickets, four of them, to the game on Saturday. So be listening for that. So Deshaun Watson, it's weird in Cleveland right now, and this isn't just me saying this, I'm observing from afar. Deshaun Watson did not take a single snap in the preseason. It's very interesting to kind of put ears in on Cleveland radio and listen to people. It feels like fans are very angry about it. The hosts that I listen to are a little more pragmatic about it. They are also the flagship of the team. I should point that out. 92.3 The Fan, our sister station up there. Jason Lloyd covers not just the Browns, he covers all of Cleveland sports for The Athletic. Here was Jason Lloyd on TV up in Cleveland saying, man, this Deshaun situation is just weird.
The whole thing is weird. The whole vibe around this entire camp.
Yeah.
It's been very strange. And I haven't been out there a ton, obviously, but I've checked it with the company, and it's just weird. It's the only best word to describe it. It doesn't make sense. When I was at the Greenbrier, back, and I only say Greenbrier for the timing of it, way back then, there was people around in sort of Deshaun's camp who were making it sound like he wasn't going to play in the preseason. And then Kevin comes out and says, he's going to play.
There you go. This is the second time we did this.
And then Deshaun comes out and says, well, it's news to me. And now Kevin sort of backtracks and says, well, we'll reassess, as we get closer to the game. And then Deshaun just shuts it down.
Yeah.
It's weird. The whole thing is weird.
Scariest two words if I'm a Browns fan there, Seth.
Yeah.
Deshaun's camp.
Yeah.
Deshaun's camp. Getting involved.
there's been kind of a vein or theme of almost victimhood now by Deshaun in some of his comments as of late, and it's funny when all of this was going down after the trade happened and everything. I spoke to a writer up there, and he had talked to Rusty Harden, and he had talked to somebody, a couple other people in Deshaun Watson's camp, and I think he'd been a little bit, my rule is, man, never sit alone in a room for 2 hours with a really good attorney and trust your judgment immediately after. It honestly sounded like he'd gotten the full PR campaign from everything.
Yeah.
And I've checked in on that person over the last couple of years, and their tune has changed a little bit.
Yeah.
They were very much, I was kind of explaining the complexities of the situation, not to mention, Texas sexual harassment laws are kind of, there's a lot of nuance to it that made that situation easy to paint in one way when it was actually way more complex. And yeah, this person has changed their tune a lot about just exactly everything about how Deshaun Watson maybe conducts himself.
They're back at square one up there. You know, if you want to feel good about the Texans situation and where they are right now, know that not only was the Deshaun Watson trade the catalyst to make the Texans a really, really good team,
yeah,
there's a lot of guys who wouldn't be on this team right now without that Deshaun Watson trade, including Tank Dell and Will Anderson. There are two
lawsuits still out there,
right?
Too.
And they're back at bargaining right now up in Cleveland. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like with themselves over this whole thing. You know,
The one woman who was very adamant not going to take she wasn't going to take a settlement. That's still very much alive. You know, there's more ugliness to come, perhaps.
And he's not playing good football. That was always going to be the big thing that was going to cancel it all out up there. Like, you know, if he plays well, everybody's going to forget about all this stuff. And I don't know that that would have been the case necessarily, but up until now, it's a we'll never know because he's injured and he's not good at football and he ain't getting out and playing in the preseason. Like his
first
game.
Yeah, you lose all benefit of the doubt when all of that. Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday text message. We're slowly turning into the most hated team in the NFL. A lot of words with a lot of teams this year. Good. Hate, at least it's relevance. You know what I mean? Wouldn't you rather be the most hated than just be floating around with the 25 other teams in the meaty part of the curve? No.
That's a really good point. I don't know why I even doubted whether Fred Taylor was just joking or not. Okay, yes, I should embrace that because what is it? It's intra AFC South animosity.
Yeah.
Which is always good for business.
Lean in.
We've got the Colts linebackers going back and forth with CJ and others during the season. All we need is Trevor Lawrence to turn into all of a sudden. Trevor Lawrence comes out week one and he's dyed his hair black.
Yeah,
and he's got
goatee.
He's gone goth.
He's goatee. Yeah, that's what you were. You know what you were when you were saying that. There's no way that anybody said that to Fred Taylor. You were. You know, wrestling is fake, guy. When you did that.
Yeah.
You got to lean into the storylines, man.
Or like the guy that, like, when a comedian tells a joke is like, well, that's not really a realistic situation.
Yeah. We got to get better at suspending disbelief on this show.
Remember, I think it was Tom Segura has a bit about a doctor's visit he had. I think it's really, really funny about this bad doctor that it was his primary care doctor. And he was kind of doing the bit on a radio show one day, and I guess one of the DJs was like, well, yeah, but I don't think like the doctor would really say that. And so it was like, cute. Yeah, thanks
for selling tickets. Yeah. I'll be at the Improv tonight.
I doubt the veracity of your stand-up joke. Yes,
exactly. Hey, call now if you want to go to the game on Saturday, 6 p.m start, so be in the evening, it's cooling off. Little college football, 6 o'clock start. Cougs, UNLV. Caller number 10 is going to win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Cougs take on UNLV this Saturday. We'll do it again in the 9 o'clock hour if you don't win. That's a 4-pack to caller number 10, 713-572-4610. We'll do it again in the final hour of the show. You'll have a couple chances tomorrow as well, so keep it tuned to Sports Radio 610 if you want to get out and watch some good college football. The beginning of the Willie Fritz era starts on Saturday at TDECU Stadium.
That was actually Louis C.K. That would have been way more relevant with the Deshaun Watson stuff.
Indeed.
Could have been a nice segue into my Louis C.K. story.
That's true. Okay, the roster. There's several guys that did not dress on Saturday for the win over the Rams. Are these guys automatically on the Houston Texans right now? There were some very, and I'm not just talking about Damian Pierce, there were some very curious names, I thought. I want to run these by Seth. Are these guys automatically a Houston Texan? That is next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Right, did these guys do enough to make the Houston Texans? We have not gotten any new news that I've seen out of the Texans today, so there's going to be just a flood of cuts later today. They've got a lot of work to do, at least outwardly, to let us know who's not going to be on this team. They'll form a practice squad in the next day or so as well. D'Amico Ryans met with the media yesterday, was asked, did you see enough from John Mechie and Damian Pierce to make this team?
We still have a lot of things to work through when it comes to the roster. You know, when you talk about those guys specifically, Mechie and Damian, I think both guys, they've done really well in practice settings and also in the game. So both guys I've seen, I know what those guys are about. I know who they are as people. And so, but we'll you guys will see those decisions here over the next couple of days.
Okay, so D'Amico's been leaning on the deadline as sort of like, hey, guys, you'll see at 3 o'clock on Tuesday what it looks like. That's the first that's the first time with this whole Damian thing where I've rolled my eyes a little bit, just because when he answered the question after the game on Sunday where he said, he was asked, why didn't Damian play? And he said something to the effect of, I've seen enough of Damian, you know, like it was a 6-second answer. You could construe that any number of ways. Right there when he said, I've seen enough of both of them and that they've played well in practice and in the games. Like, no, Damian has not played well. Damian has 8 carries for 9 yards. I mean, if you think Damian played well in the games, then you are putting everything on the offensive line. Like, it is completely the offensive line's fault that his carries collapsed underneath a 1.1-yard average, and everybody else's carries were getting like 5 yards a clip in the preseason.
It is, and, you know, somebody pointed this out to me last night, was that I guess part of me reading D'Amico's comments about Damian have been that it's not like he's been giving him a ringing endorsement. Well, he did kind of. He said he's been fine. He needs more opportunities. The blocking hasn't been good in front of him. You know, that's not the same as saying he's made the team. He said he needs more opportunities. He's been good in practice. The blocking hasn't been good in front of him.
Yeah.
I mean, D'Amico criticizing the offensive line in that regard is not something he would typically do.
Right.
Should we read that? Some people are reading that as, well, you look, yeah, clearly he's saying he is just fine because he even threw the offensive line under the bus and he wouldn't typically do that. I think that part of why it's hard for me to accept it, I think, is maybe just because my read on where Damian Pierce is right now would be so different from D'Amico's if D'Amico really feels like, if he genuinely feels that, like, blocking has been the only issue. Because, you know, when both D'Amico and Titus Howard talked about how Damian has had really good practices, you know, my objection to that is that, all right, that's practice where you're not allowed to tackle, and Damian's superpower is breaking tackles.
Yep.
And he hasn't been breaking tackles in games, whether blocking is good or whether blocking is bad. But if you go beyond that, too, I have been impressed with Damian Pierce in practice. I have said from the first 2 weeks, I was like, yeah, it does look like he's more decisive, he's crisper. But looking back on it, man, honestly, he's been on the ground a lot. When guys are just thudding, he's on the ground. And he pops right back up and he keeps going. But he's getting knocked down in situations where I don't think in 2022 he would have been getting knocked down. Mm-hmm. I think he's made progress, but there's no way. I really cannot fathom a situation where both Caserio and D'Amico wouldn't be thinking, all right, yeah, but there's still something off with him.
Yeah.
It's like, there's something that's not there. I really can't imagine that they feel awesome about him in week one if he has to play. I just can't go there. Maybe I'm the one who's completely wrong. But I just can't. I can't believe that they feel that great about him right now.
It's a bigger body of work than just training camp. Like, it was all last year too. It's a year and a half body of work, and I've reached a point with it now, Seth. Like, the bargaining I've done with myself on this. Like, okay, fine. You keep Damian on the team, but Cam Akers better be on this team. You know, like, if you need a change of pace, if you need a change of pace during a game, I don't want to be burning daylight with 7 Damian Pierce carries. I want 7 Cam Akers carries.
You know, Bill Belichick was on McAfee the other day, and he was basically saying, he was talking about what you can and can't, you know, deduce from training camp. And he said with quarterbacks, he really has a hard time saying whether a quarterback is playing well or not, a young quarterback especially, because you're facing these vanilla coverages. I think when a quarterback plays poorly against vanilla coverages, you can tell something from that. But is he genuinely playing really well? Hard to say. Like, Bo Nix, he did some impressive things in the preseason, but I really hold back a lot in reserve because you also saw a lot of stuff that, man, versus actual NFL regular season defense, that's going to be dicey. Anthony Richardson's done some bad stuff against vanilla defenses that makes me skeptical of Anthony Richardson. But with running backs, what Belichick did go on to say is, like, you know, a lot of it, you're just trying to see what the individual players do. You know, defensive backs, can they play man coverage? I would say, personally, running backs, can they break tackles? With Cam Akers, I thought there was a whole list of things that I wanted to see of a guy coming off of a second Achilles tendon tear. All right, is he okay with the physical side of the game? Yeah, Akers was lowering his shoulder into people, trucking much larger dudes on the sideline, all of that. Can he cut back against the grain when there is bad blocking? Yes. Can he navigate his way through traffic when the blocking might be okay but is imperfect? Yes, he did all of that. I saw zero of that from Dameon Pierce. I didn't see an element of physicality. Who had the more physical? Who was more physical in preseason games, Cam Akers or Dameon Pierce?
Not even close. Not even close.
Cam Akers was more physical than Dameon Pierce.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing. Okay, the blocking wasn't great. Even as Dameon was getting tackled, there was no knockback.
Right.
There was no where at one point in the preseason when he got tackled because the blocking was bad, did you feel like, yeah, but the defender got the worst end of the stick on that one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, he's done none of it. None of it.
So he didn't play on Saturday. We don't know what that means for Dameon. There were a handful of other guys, Seth, that did not dress. They were healthy in camp. A lot of guys didn't dress, but they've been banged up. Jeff Okuda, MJ Stewart, Beck, Charlie Heck, you know, Will Anderson obviously is making the team, blah, blah, blah. Danico Autry has been suspended, so they haven't been playing him since the suspension was announced. Robert Woods did not dress for this game. Do you think Robert Woods is on this team? Was that a sign that he's made the team?
Boy, I don't think it's a sign he's on the team. I think it's a combination of his age.
Yep.
Where, a lot of times, even with your vet, this does happen with veteran dudes. Like, I think Jerry Hughes is on the team, but even if he wasn't going to be, I could see where they might not play him. Because for two reasons. One is, all right, like, you know, no reason subjecting this guy to harm when we've already made the decision on him. He's earned his stripes.
Yeah.
But two, those guys are higher paid.
Yeah.
And you don't want them to get injured and then you're on the hook.
Yeah.
You're on the hook for their salary for the entire year.
And that counts
year.
Against the cap. You know, just because they're not on the roster doesn't mean it doesn't count against the cap.
So with veteran players, it's really tough to deduce anything from that. But I think right now, honestly, I think it's a moving situation where they have to evaluate not just how the guy fits on the team, but also what trade offers are they garnering from other teams about them. Yeah. There's teams out there that are in the market for a guy like Robert Woods. There's other teams that are in the market for a younger guy like John Metchie with upside. And it might, I don't want to say it's out of Nick's hands, but it might be a matter of Nick looking at it and just kind of doing the math on, all right, well, we like these guys equally for different reasons, but they're offering up a third rounder, and we'll part with the guy. If we like a few guys equally, then we'll just part with whichever guy can command the biggest trade.
You think Kurt Heinisch is on this team? Because he didn't dress either. That's a young guy who was an undrafted guy a few years ago.
Yeah, that's really, and still on his rookie deal.
Yeah.
But the big thing is, I almost look at Kurt Heinisch as he was almost individually in a competition with Khalil Davis. And
who also didn't dress.
right. Yeah, I think that and these are those tough decisions. When I look at D'Amico looking almost kind of depressed in these last couple press conferences, I think it's guys like Kurt Heinisch, who he probably loves, but they're thinking, all right, we might have to make a hard decision here. I would put it at more likely off than on.
Yeah, more likely off, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. I got to double check.
Heinisch, one of the only guys who had a lot of guys on the defense had good plays in the first half of the Ravens game in the playoffs, but yeah. Heinisch sacked Lamar Jackson.
That's right, he did.
That's a nice one. When you're a guy that doesn't get a whole lot of sacks, it's nice when one of them is
Lamar.
Is big game.
Yeah,
you grab the 12-point buck on the one buck that you've gotten in the last few years.
There
that's
you go.
That's pretty nice. Yeah.
There you go. Hey, congrats to Derek here in Houston. He is on his way to the Cougs game.
Good job, Derek, and actually
Khalil Davis did play. I apologize. So Heinisch didn't play. Khalil Davis did play.
It's interesting.
On Saturday.
The defensive tackle line, we haven't talked a lot about it a lot because it's all kind of, it's not a big name position and everything, and the guys they have on the defensive line squad aren't big names.
It's very though.
I think McTelvin Agim, Kurt Heinisch, and Khalil Davis, and then you factor in Marcus Harris because he's a young draft pick with upside who probably would get picked up off of waivers. I think those four are – it's a really tough decision if you only, say, keep two of those guys.
Agim did get cut yesterday. So that was
Ageem did get cut yesterday. I knew that once upon a time, like 90 minutes ago, I knew it. But now it's too late in the show, Sean.
It's all good. I know.
It's 7:56 in the morning. I'm pretty much done for the day. Thanks.
All right. Well, get your Astros game face on here because we got to revisit last night's game against the Philadelphia Phillies. These games have all had a very similar feel since the Astros hit the road. We will discuss that. Coming up next.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
In life, some days are good, and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey. And then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not-so-good days, and the challenges. And acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
Hey, football fans, you want the real deal? The raw, unfiltered truth about everything going down in the NFL? Join Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champ, on the Stinkin' Truth podcast. He's breaking it all down for you. No punches pulled. From the game-changing moments that won or lost a game to the player evaluations, this is analysis you won't hear anywhere else. Mark's got you covered. So strap in and get ready for the ride, because this isn't your average football podcast. Follow the Stinkin' Truth in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.